You are listening to The State of Sustainability, a podcast that highlights sustainability initiatives throughout the state and develops a casual conversation about environmental stewardship that the average person can understand and replicate. I'm your host, Caleb Powell.
And I'm your co-host, Ashley Capurra.
So, we know we just ended a small series on higher education, and we thought, you know, that went really well, so might as well start another series. So this is part one of the sustainable cities. I'm gonna do that again. Sustainability cities. Okay, hang on.
I know, it's a mouthful.
So we know we just got done wrapping up our two-part series on higher education, but we thought, hey, it went so well, might as well start another series. So this is part one of the Sustainable City series. So over the next few months, we are going to be highlighting cities across the state and their sustainability initiatives. So like I said before, the first one, the part one of the series is Chattanooga.
Yeah, I'm really excited to share you know, with our listeners, some awesome things being done. I feel like we hear about this stuff all the time, but a lot of this stuff just isn't always shared, or maybe, you know, wait until projects are completely done for it to be shared. So I feel like there's so much that people, you know, don't realize that is going on in their city that really benefits them, their community, whether it's environmentally, but also economically and socially.
Yeah, and Chattanooga has a special place in my heart. I started my sustainability educational career, if that's even a thing. I went my freshman year to UTC studying environmental engineering, so that's sort of where I decided I wanted to go down the path of sustainability or environmental studies, and so very excited to talk and dive deeper into what Chattanooga, where Chattanooga's came from, and where they're going.
Yeah, so, I mean, they were once known as the most polluted city in America, but Chattanooga, you know, is now such a green city, and it boasts about its clean air. It's crazy. So once citizens had to drive through the town during the day with their headlights on, because the air quality was so bad, and even guys would have to take extra white shirts to change into after their lunch, because, you know, the smog and the air was just so bad. But now you can clearly see the beauty of Chattanooga's historic downtown, as well as their scenic hills and valleys, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah, that was actually a big draw for me going to college there, is all of the outdoor activities, you know, hiking, biking, camping, canoeing. So it's crazy to think that at one point Chattanooga was known as having the worst air quality in all of America or all of the United States. So it's just amazing to see where they've came. And, you know, really where they're going. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. So we've got a really cool episode for you guys. We hope you guys enjoy. Let's learn about Chattanooga. All right. And for today, I would like to introduce our guest, Eric Schmidt. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Can't complain. You know, we're still working from home, doing the podcast from the home office. So can't really complain there, but I won't lie, I am ready to get back out there and do some of our podcasts in person. And there's just a dynamic that gives that I miss a lot. But hey, we're still getting it done, and we're glad to have you on the podcast. So
thanks so much for having me, and glad to represent Chattanooga. And I completely understand it's important to get back together with each other and be inspired by each other's work. So look forward for that soon as well.
So I wanted to give a little bit of a background of Eric before we get started and started talking about Chattanooga. So Eric serves as the Director of Sustainability for the City of Chattanooga in the Department of City Planning. In this role, Eric provides coordination and planning with the Office of Mayor Tim Kelly, department administrators, and operations staff to achieve greater presence and adoption of sustainable business practices, identification, planning, and funding of major capital projects which address sustainability goals and objectives, and planning, promotion, and engagement with internal and external stakeholders for city-led sustainability initiatives, and that includes the U.S. Department of Energy's Better Buildings Challenge, Clean Energy for Low-Income Communities Accelerator, and the U.S. DOE Soul Smart Initiative. So, prior to coming to the city, Eric served as a lead ecologist for the Chattanooga, Tennessee Office of Arcadis. Is that correct? A-R-C-A-D-I-S?
Yeah, it's Arcadis.
And for almost 10 years, and then following working in the Georgia Department of Transportation Office of Environmental Compliance. So Eric has a extensive knowledge when it comes to environmental sustainability, and we're very happy to have you. And I know that Chattanooga is very happy to have you working alongside the mayor and making in the Department of City Planning. Directing sustainability initiatives throughout the city. So thanks for joining us.
You bet. Thanks again for having me.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about this in the intro. Chattanooga hasn't always been the green city that it is now. I wanted to talk a little bit about the city of Chattanooga's path to sustainability. Can you give us a little like historical background of Chattanooga's path and where you guys have came from?
Absolutely. Given that we just celebrated National Indigenous Peoples Day, I think it'd be remiss to not start off with the first history here, which was with our Native American residents and the Cherokee and Creek and other tribes that inhabited this land for what was, one can only imagine, just an absolutely beautiful, pristine wilderness where the Tennessee River runs through the valley here between the Cumberland Plateau and Lookout Mountain and Missionary Ridge before entering the Tennessee River Gorge. Artifacts go back as far as 12,000 years on Moccasin Bend, which is essentially a peninsula that's right in the heart of downtown and now houses our regional wastewater treatment facility and the nation's first archaeological park. So just wanted to kind of lay that groundwork first. And of course, the Trail of Tears came directly through Chattanooga at Ross's Landing, downtown at the new riverfront. So as European settlers moved into the area, it was kind of a traditional river town that was challenged with the flooding that occurred with an undammed river, with the Tennessee River, which could be quite devastating at times with waters rising over 30 feet over its banks. You have an entire sort of second downtown that was built above the first floors that were first built. And so where things accelerated was with the industrial, and on par and pace with the Industrial Revolution in the early 1900s with the establishment of some coke firing plants and steel plants. That really found their highest use during the World Wars. And it provided, on one hand, a lot of economic prosperity for a certain phase of history, but on the same hand, it also provided us a legacy of water quality and air quality issues that are still with us to this day, from foundry sands being used as foundation for residences and businesses that are now being remediated through the EPA and CDEC. We had creosote and coke that were placed in Chattanooga Creek that still has a legacy and challenges ahead in front of it. The sort of the pinnacle of that phase, unfortunately, was in 1969 when Walter Cronkite read on the evening news that Chattanooga had, as far as standardized air quality testing at the time, the worst air quality in the country. So that's kind of a jarring moment, but it probably didn't take that to tell people how bad it was. The stories from grandparents and so forth talk about having to use headlights during the daytime, men taking a second shirt to work because they'd have to remove the first one about halfway through because it was covered in soot. That's a pretty dim view of Chattanooga, and it's hard to imagine it, but the city does sit down in a bowl at it, you know, with surrounding topography, and so that air does tend to sit when we don't have fronts sort of blowing through to wipe it away. So with that, and with other regulatory reasons, those factories kind of one by one began to shut down. I guess I should also mention that we had a TNT plant out the Volunteer Army Ammunition Plant, and that was another big piece of work here industrial-wise. And so, but as those things changed and the economy sort of went into irons, a strong constituency of residents came together and started to talk about the problems and figure out and try to hash out a plan for an economic recovery. And so that went in some different phases and reinvestment in downtown. Some iconic things such as the Walnut Street walking bridge were slated for demolition. Same thing, the residents came together and proclaimed its significance, and it's now, you know, centerpiece feature of being able to walk over the river any day of the year practically, to see beautiful Audubon Island or McClellan Line Island, however you refer to it, the Bluffview Arts District. Just was really stunning views. So and former Mayor Bob Corker and Senator Corker kind of took a leadership role in establishing the riverfront concept. And so over decades, that's just built on itself, but it's been through a lot of hard work, collaboration, something we call the Chattanooga Way, and I think we'll touch on a little bit. But it resulted in decades of work that resulted in a riverfront walkway that goes all the way from Chickamauga Dam to the foot of Lookout Mountain and will eventually connect on a rails to trails platform from the river to back to the east to Missionary Ridge, and basically provide a lot more access for underserved communities. So this has been a long 100-year plus process, but I can talk more a little bit later about some of the success stories, but there is, I think, at the heart of all of this, a vested interest by not only generationally present citizens, but many people who are moving here seem to have the same ethos and passion for a place where they can have a great quality of life, life-work balance, and access to all these wonderful natural resources we have.
Yeah, and while some of that I did not know about, I love Chattanooga, and imagining it, of course I've seen pictures, but trying to imagine in person what it was like before, I can't, because Chattanooga is so beautiful. And when I think about Chattanooga, I think about sustainability, and like you mentioned, the Chattanooga Way, which we'll talk about more later, the community as a whole, just their passion for sustainability really makes a difference as well.
Yeah, Ashley, it's funny because, you know, when we were talking about the history, and as I was listening, it just sort of rattled my brain, because I actually went to UTC, the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga, for my first year of college. I wanted to get out of town and go somewhere where, you know, the outdoors were a big thing, hiking, biking, camping. And so I chose Chattanooga, and I also started my sustainability path, if you will, there. So I started studying environmental engineering there. So it's just, it's crazy how full circle it is. You know, Chattanooga at one point was the worst in the nation for air quality, and you know, it drew me there in college to study environmental sustainability. So it's just crazy to think about that. I just wanted to add that in.
Yeah, I think it, you know, whether you're you know, an environmental engineer major or just an everyday citizen, I think there's a broad appreciation for what we've got. And it's not just the heart of downtown, the surrounding areas are obviously beautiful as well. And I think it's not lost on people, and I think it's great that you know, TDEC is helping to keep the story alive, but it does it on its own. It's almost impossible to talk about Chattanooga's current state without its past state. And so while it's a darker chapter in history, it's also important. And there's still work to do, but keeps me employed on a daily basis. So, but as it turns out, I moved here from Houston, Texas, where I was born and raised, and you know, I used to call it the capital of suburban sprawl. And my wife's mother's side of the family's from Chattanooga, and when I visited in the late '90s, there's a term obviously now used quite a bit called sense of place, and that's something that struck me in the downtown area with the red brick buildings, and it's clearly a river town and things like that. So it is really a special place, and I just wanted to mark that as well. Just something that I think there's something inherent about Chattanooga that people really love and are leaves them invested to want to take care of it.
Yeah, definitely. So since we are, like, you know, you brought us full circle, can you talk about maybe the three top sustainability initiatives that y'all have going on right now?
Yeah. So obviously we're happy to have a new mayor, Tim Kelly, who was elected and inaugurated in April this year. And he has a strong platform of sustainability, with some very big, broad goals in terms of energy reduction, waste reduction, connectivity, and access, equitable access, to green spaces. Those are probably some of the biggest areas that we'll look at. And so, sort of as a bridge from work the city has been doing, we're still involved in reporting on an annual basis to the U.S. Department of Energy's Better Buildings Challenge. We became achievers 5 years early in 2018, and just last year recorded a 40% reduction in energy use intensity, and that's kind of on a per square footage and occupancy density kind of matrix. But so we're continuing to focus on energy reduction and efficiencies, because that's kind of your top, easiest, lowest hanging fruit to help reduce your energy consumption and thereby your carbon footprint. I think we're going to continue to look for ways to increase our use of renewables. We just last November, a 4-megawatt solar array came online at the regional wastewater treatment facility, and it is going to offset, we're anticipating, about 12% of the plant's energy use. And I guess I shouldn't say offset, it's a behind the meter, directly feeds power to the plant, so there's not a single kilowatt hour that isn't used. I think we'll continue to look for ways where we can increase operational resiliency at on-site location. I don't think we're going to be able to do that everywhere, so we're going to, I think, continue to look at ways that we can, other tools that may be available in the Tennessee Valley for helping us achieve carbon reduction goals. We're looking very hard at the waste reduction and recycling challenges that the country and world at large are experiencing. We have, in terms of the transportation, we have active work streams going on, whether it's coordination of signalized intersections, smart sensors on our Martin Luther King Boulevard test bed, in partnership with City of Chattanooga Electric Power Board, or EPB, and the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. And just looking at ways that we can enhance our available routes and modes of transportation. Again, kind of broad categories, but we've just passed our first budget with the new mayor. And so we will be refining some of those tactics to get to the broader sustainability goals. I guess I should say, in terms of initiatives and or funded projects for this year, we are in partnership with the Electric Power Board, our municipal electric distributor, to build a microgrid, which is nearing completion at our, what we're calling our public safety complex, where the police headquarters, 911 center, and fire administration is. And that is going to be a location that can go into island mode in the event of a power outage. We're obviously kind of seeing some heavy storms. We just were hit with a tornado last year, and back in 2011, we were hit with the terrible outbreak that happened here. TVA has 5 nines of reliability, but we're just basically trying to prepare for the worst and make sure our critical operations are up and running so that we can serve our community. We also were really grateful to receive a TDEC Volkswagen diesel mitigation grant for about $950,000, and we're matching that with over $300,000 to replace 7 diesel medium and heavy duty trucks with electric, propane, and CNG. So that's going to be our first sort of foray into alternative fuels and electric vehicles. And then we're also going to start a project where we are getting electric vehicle chargers in more public places, such as City Hall, the Development Resource Center, where we issue permits and do design work, and then our local city parks and community centers to be able to provide more equitable access to those resources. So we've got quite a bit to do, and looking forward to getting those projects rolling, and so that's maybe a flavor for you.
Yeah, that's I mean, in itself right there is a tremendous amount of initiatives, and I know that you are going to be working hard, especially with the new administration, to get a lot of other stuff going. So, you know, anybody that's listening and loves Chattanooga, keep an eye out, because I know Eric's hard at work trying to make Chattanooga even more sustainable than it already is. So, you know, you touched on a couple community collaborations or how sustainability in Chattanooga sort of falls in with community collaboration. Could you talk about like how the community plays a role in Chattanooga's success in sustainability?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. That's really important. You know, I've been in this role about 7 years, and we really, as anyone will probably tell you, government can't do everything, but we can lead by example, and we can pull people together to kind of get folks moving in the same direction. But we don't control the private sector in a way that they, you know, we don't control their budgets, we don't control what they choose to do with energy efficiency and potentially some renewables and or waste reduction, but none of this really works without community collaboration and investment. And so we're really fortunate to have just be flush with local organizations, nonprofits, and philanthropic organizations that I should note had a very, very large part in turning the ship around back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, and to this day, fund lots of important initiatives that are run by our nonprofits. So I think that moving forward, absolutely, you know, in terms of an example is green spaces and a greenhouse gas inventory that they commissioned within the last couple of years. Prior to that, the city's last sustainability plan was in 2010 for a climate action plan, and they kind of did a 1 year later summary. Working with green spaces, we kind of summarized that over 90% of the action items had been either addressed or in progress and some completed. The city's wrapping up a regional resilience plan. The path forward from all those things is to work to create a feedback loop, honestly, between all of those organizations and the mayor's office to help better inform, how, when we look at broad overarching sustainability goals for the community, how do we engage? What are the needs? How can we actually improve various parts of the community? And every neighborhood's different. And so without some of that information, we would just sort of be choosing from a more distant space. So we look forward to having that kind of engagement and feedback. The education piece, so I think that one of the ideas that we talked about is having kind of a sustainability / resilience council that's got representatives from the community that are representatives. And so the idea is information flows up and it flows back down and kind of over and over as an iterative process. So that it's a little vague, but there are ways that we can encourage others to take up the helm and the personal responsibility, whether it's recycling or working with EPB to have a free home energy assessment to see how you can tighten up your home's building envelope to save money on your energy bills, or even just paying attention to your energy bills. So there's things that we can do as individuals and as businesses. Green Spaces has a green light program to certify through best practices, greening your business. And so there's some small, easier steps that you can do in those ways to be a part of that. But it's also important just from the community, whether it's funding, but also voices that they can come out and say, hey, this is a priority for us. We do want you to continue to protect green spaces or build more of them. We want more of our energy to come from renewable energy sources. We're really fortunate TVA has a 60% carbon-free generation portfolio. And then there are ways to help bridge that gap and help them accelerate that process. So that's kind of a broad overview, but I would say absolutely community collaboration in the Chattanooga way is how we've gotten things done. And going back to the Riverwalk, that was done with the help of those philanthropic organizations and advocates and businesses and others, and then governments coming together. Stringer's Ridge Park is another great example. It was a parcel that was slated, this is on the west side of town, part of the backdrop and landscape of Chattanooga, and I believe a condominium building was slated to be built, and the city worked with the Mountain Biking Association and Trails and came together, purchased the land, and now it's an in-town community park next large areas of older neighborhoods where you can go mountain bike or hike on any day right after work, literally ride your bike there if you want. So that's an example of how people really come together. And I think that will just be critical moving forward.
Yeah. And I was going back and looking, at some of our older podcasts, and we actually are, I think our fifth episode ever. And I think we're close to 30 right now. Was back 2 years ago in 2019, and it was on energy conservation, and we actually interviewed green spaces. So I know it was 2 years ago, so there's probably a lot of stuff that's going on and has started since then, but if anybody has any in that's listening wants to know more about us, we've got some information in that one. It's the Energy Conservation Podcast, episode 5. So go back and listen to that. And like I said, there's probably a lot of stuff that's been started or added since then. But that sort of gives a little bit, if you want to know a little bit more about some of the initiatives or you know programs that are going on that have been in Chattanooga for a while, that can give you a little bit more information about that. Let's see here.
I was just going to say, it kind of going back to a collaboration. I know I've mentioned EPBA a couple times, and I was just going to mention again, MPBA, just this week as well. TBA, EPB, and the city, Mayor Kelly, announced a collaboration to do part of their home energy uplift program, and a total of $1.1 million between the three agencies. To do deep energy retrofits for the sort of the worst off of residences that have inefficient heating and cooling, if they have it at all, just the full suite of things to do. But those dollars will be dedicated towards Chattanooga homes and making those deep energy retrofits. So it's I believe they just passed their 400th home that has been benefited from those deep energy retrofits, and energy savings can be up to 25% for an individual home. That really makes an impact on the homeowner's wallet, and frees up money in their budget to be able to use for things that they need just to enjoy the life that they live.
Definitely, and you know, I don't really hear about that kind of initiatives. That's just something you don't really ever hear about, so it's really exciting to hear Chattanooga's path and how, you know, sort of giving back to the community and the collaboration with the community. So great work there.
Yeah, it's a great program.
So as far as you know, moving forward, you know, what is something that you'll have in the works or something that you're hoping to accomplish maybe in the next 5 years? And I know that, Mayor Kelly just, you know, hasn't been in there too long. But just from, you know, our conversation today and other conversations I've had with people in Chattanooga, he seems to be one that's like, okay, here's the plan. Let's go. Let's get some stuff done. So, anything that you can or would like to share about what you'll have in the works moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I kind of mentioned some of them earlier in terms of working to build out. I think what we're going to see, one thing I guess we haven't talked about a whole lot other than on the VW grant, the TDA grant, is really what we're seeing in the state's economy with electric vehicles and with the announcement of Blue Oval City outside of Memphis, now having, it's kind of remarkable to think in Tennessee, we have four major auto manufacturers, including Volkswagen in our own backyard, going to be manufacturing electric vehicles in Tennessee. And on top of that, we are going to be an improved graphite will be building a battery plant in Chattanooga to power electric vehicles. And so in between the TDEC and TVA fast charging network, statewide network, which I can't applaud enough to have a fast charger every 50 miles on every interstate and major highway, is really going to transform things. And so I think that one of the things the city needs to be preparing for is helping to build out that charging network. Obviously, a lot of charging happens at home, but I think they say 90% of charging might happen at home. But my retort to that is the 10% that doesn't is the 90% of worry and range anxiety. So I think that we need to make public charging available both for city employees. I think that we're going to be looking strongly at how much of our fleet we can convert to in the light duty realm to electric vehicles, and so providing charging infrastructure for those, charging infrastructure for our employees, working with EPD and others to help build out that charging landscape, I think it's really going to be one of the most exciting sort of challenges to tackle because it is moving so quickly. In terms of the 5 years, in terms of 4 years, and we're halfway into the first year, we've got a budget under our belt, we've got three more budget cycles. And so, to your point about the excitement and the pace that Mayor Kelly is bringing, I think it's recognized that you have to move quickly because things can take time to get in place. So I think that we'll be working quickly on sort of looking at how we can get to significant carbon reductions, making that transition to electric vehicles as much as we can, continuing to work on our efficiencies and getting our hands around some of our waste reduction challenges. I think, and again, the connectivity and transportation, I should also give some major props to CARTA, the Chattanooga Area Regional Transportation Authority, who has already put in place several all-electric megabuses. And so they're also in the process of assessing their routes and better servicing our communities and kind of a more agile footprint. That's kind of a flavor, I think, of things that we're looking to do. Can't manage what you don't measure, so I think that we'll be looking at trying to move towards an annual or biannual carbon assessment, and just looking for those tactics to help us not only as a city government but within the community reduce that carbon footprint.
Yeah, I could not agree more as far as measuring. I will say Chattanooga, as far as charging stations, and I think it's been probably about 2.5 years. I'm sorry, 2 years since I've been, but the times I've gone to Chattanooga, I'm just amazed at how many charging stations there are. So if that says anything, and y'all are wanting to up that, so that's great. But I have one question. This may be a kind of like a selfishness on my part, just because this, I work a lot with food waste. I was curious if y'all had any food waste goals for the city.
So that's part of the waste reduction that we're looking at. And so, in fact, we just partnered with a nonprofit called CoLab and just received some entries for a what we call a reverse pitch challenge during Startup Week next week on the 19th. And what the idea was to get some community feedback, talking about that community feedback loop, about ideas and ways to deal with waste reduction. Part of that is recycling, but part of that is also the food waste piece. We have a couple companies in town right now that do that already on a sort of a subscription basis. But I think that the city has the resources to look at doing things at scale and basically facilitating that diversion of food waste from the landfill. We've got some ideas. Don't want to let them all out of the bag at the moment, but I can tell you that the city is looking very closely at that. And there's ways, as you know, with anaerobic digestion and other things, that there are ways to turn waste into clean fuel. So I think that we'll continue to look for those kinds of synergies, and that's another big piece of where I sit in the kind of project that I try to promote. It's how can we leverage the work that we're doing in one sector to another, whether it's transportation to energy and other things. So I think that we want to be a leader in the waste reduction space. I'll probably hold back on a specific number and percentage. Again, that quantification is the challenge to do from from a waste audit standpoint on a community level, but I think that we're going to be looking at some ways to really strike at the heart of that challenge.
That's so interesting. And, you know, before we wrap up, I was just thinking, you know, a lot of things sort of are in the air right now on direction and projects and like you were talking about metrics. Where could our listeners sort of be up to date on what Chattanooga is doing sustainably? Do you have like a Twitter or Facebook or a website that everyone could sort of check in on if they're wondering, you know, what's happening in Chattanooga next when it comes like regarding sustainability?
Yeah, fair question. I think one thing that we want to do, we don't have a fully open dashboard in that place, but there's a couple things that we've got going on that I think we're going to be looking at revamping our city gov website at some point in the future to really be a more fluid, up-to-date resource. And so that in combination, we have a really great Office of Open Data and Performance Management. It's run by a guy by the name of Tim Moreland, who's just a whiz at basically working with departments and staff to find efficiencies through data-driven metrics. And so that's helped to find easy fixes. It's helped to identify larger trends and challenges. And so my hope is that we can kind of marry those two things together and be able to provide a snapshot of where Chattanooga is in terms of numbers on waste reduction. One that I thought I'd mention that I should have mentioned earlier is the energy efficiency piece that we talked about. A 40% reduction in energy use intensity, but a raw energy consumption of 20%, and that equivalent is about 1,400 average Tennessee homes, and has saved us about $9.3 million since 2012, had we not done anything. Last year alone, 2020, we spent $2.4 million less than we did in 2012 on electrical costs. And we've increased the number of electric meters that we've got. And so I think that essentially we found also that, and Green Spaces Board shows this, but what we found is that we have had economic growth while reducing our use and reliance on resources. So the two aren't mutually exclusive, and I think that shows that can be our path forward. Can continue to do our path forward. And again, with electric vehicles and other opportunities, I think we have a great great option to have economic growth and improve our environment at the same time.
Yeah, I'm really glad we ended on that. I love that you said that. So I just wanted to take this time to thank you. I'm super proud of where Chattanooga's come and very proud of where it's going, especially under your leadership in the sustainability realm. So thanks for all you do, Eric, and thanks for taking time to be on the podcast today. We've really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much, Caleb and Ashley. Really enjoyed it, and look forward to listening to the other podcasts and wish you well in the days to come. Let us know if we can ever do anything for you.
Yeah, same to you. If you think that we can help you out in any way, don't be afraid to send us an email or call us up.
Definitely.
Sounds great. Look forward to it.
Have a good
Thanks,
one.
Y'all.
The Ranger Report, brought to you by the Tennessee State Parks. Fun and adventure, naturally.
All right, and we are back with our Ranger Report. Finally, the past, I think, 3 months, we haven't had a Ranger Report just due to schedules not aligning and everything like that, but we're very excited to be back with the Ranger Report portion of the podcast. Today, we are lucky to have Jordan Bryson here with us. How are you doing today, Jordan?
I'm doing great. How are all of you doing?
Oh, can't complain. It's a Monday, but, you know, got a lot of stuff to do this week and excited to finally get back recording our Ranger reports. It's one of my favorite parts of the podcast. So, Jordan, you're a Ranger at Booker T. Washington State Park, and I just wanted to start off with sort of getting to know you a little bit better. If you wanted to just introduce yourself, and you can go as in deep or as shallow as you'd like, just sort of talking about your past experiences with the state park system and then, you know, your reason for becoming a park ranger.
Yeah, like it's been said, I'm Ranger Jordan Bryson. I work at Booker T. Washington State Park. I've been a park ranger since 2015. Started out at Harrison Bay State Park before coming down to Booker T. But I grew up going to parks, state parks all my life. Visited Montgomery Bell almost every year for camping. Went out to Pickwick Landing all the time. And just really loved visiting parks and wanted to give back as I got older, and eventually found out that I loved working outside and educating people. So it just seemed a perfect fit for me.
Yeah, that's really cool. So I'm guessing are you from the Chattanooga area? Because you said that you worked, both the parks that you've worked at are in Chattanooga, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. First Harrison Bay, then Booker T. But I'm actually a transplant. Moved here for work, moved here for the job, and I've loved it, and continue to just enjoy staying in the area. So it's been a great chance to live in the area, and both parks have been awesome for that.
Yeah, and Chattanooga is like the perfect place for like outdoor activities. You know, of course the state parks, but actually I chose to go to UTC for my first year of college just for that reason. So and actually this episode of the podcast is our first episode of a series that we're starting on sustainable cities, and Chattanooga is our first one. So excited to have you on here, and glad that we could find a time that worked. And you know, just thank you for all you do, being a park ranger. So I wanted to jump into a short history of the park. If you wouldn't mind, could you talk about like when it became a state park and what the land was before it?
Yeah, so Booker T. Washington State Park was officially became a park in 1950. Prior to that, in 1938, it was set aside as a park as one of the Civilian Conservation Corps parks. What's interesting with us is we were an all African-American crew, came to the area to build Booker T. Washington, or what would eventually be Booker T. Washington State Park. Very similar to Harrison Bay, we were housing farming land prior to it getting turned over to the federal government and then the state government. Some of that is underwater after the impoundment of the Tennessee River at the Chickamauga Dam. And that's kind of the start of our park.
Awesome. And so for someone that's never been to Booker T. Washington State Park, or doesn't really know what it is, you know, we've talked about the location. It's in Chattanooga. But could you sort of talk about, like, if you're looking at a map, where it is in relation to maybe the downtown area?
So, yeah, we're not too far from the downtown area. We're from the downtown. We're pretty northeast. We're right there on the Chickamauga Lake on the Tennessee River. If you follow the river, you'll get to us. We're about 20-30 minutes from Chattanooga, and or from downtown Chattanooga, with right outside of the actual city limits of Chattanooga. So we're very close to the downtown, but still far enough that we have that beautiful nature around us.
Yeah, you know, I feel like there's quite a few in Tennessee. There's a lot of our, you know, major cities that we've got, and there's parks that are, you know, close enough for people in the city to be able to make a really quick little day trip or go hike. But you know, they're close enough to the downtown area that where it's not too much of a trek, but it's also far enough away where you can still get the beauty of nature and sort of be away from the, you know, the concrete jungle, if you will.
Yeah. And we are right at a perfect distance, from workers in downtown to even just come out, and they do come out for their lunch break and just sit and picnic in the park and enjoy the views before they have to go to the hustle and bustle of downtown again.
Yeah, I love that. So we always like to sort of get a little bit more of the actual park's information. Like if you had to take all 56 state parks and put them into three categories, small, medium, and large, where would Booker T. Washington's park, where would it sort of fall in those three categories?
I would put us on medium. We are a little bit bigger than a small park, but we're not super large or a super medium. We've got about 350 acres, but we've added about 30 to 40 recently, so we're verging on 400. But it's all very centralized, so it seems a lot larger than some parks that might be strung out or very shoreline specific.
I see. And so, you know, you talked about some of the water features that you guys have. What kind of activities are offered at the park?
So our main attraction, or what we're best known for, are about three things. Fishing, we have two fishing piers here at the park, one facing the lake, one facing a slough, and they have a fisherman on it every single day. As much as the park is open, doesn't matter what the temperature is, I will have a fisherman out at this park every day. Our second biggest feature is our picnicking, because we've got such beautiful views of Chickamauga Lake and the Tennessee River. Picnicking day use is very, very high. And then our third feature is we have a very good nature trail that is also a mountain bike trail. Bikers come out almost every day also, and it's a heavily utilized portion of the park.
That's awesome. One of my best friends, he bought a house about 2 years ago in Chattanooga, and he his main thing is rock climbing, but what he does, you know, the second most out of his time is mountain biking. I'd really like to get into it. I just haven't took the plunge into finding me a good bike and, you know, getting all the equipment needed, but that's really neat to know.
Yeah, it's I've biked part of our trail. I haven't sat down to do all of it, but it's a fun trail. It's not too difficult, so it's a great trail to kind of get started on to build those skills.
So are you guys just a day park, a day use park?
We are a day use park, but we do have two large group overnight facilities, our group camp and group lodge, but we are a day use park for the general public.
I see. Well, awesome. Is there anything else that you feel like that you need to highlight on the park? I feel like we've covered a lot of stuff, but I didn't know if there's anything else that you sort of wanted to mention regarding your park.
So we are currently, as a park, trying to go back and really start building up our conservation side of the park. We've been very good on the education and visitor quality, but now we are striving to do more conservation work at the park. We've recently stopped mowing a field that we will hopefully burn this spring if the weather holds off, and re-sow with native flowers and grasses and have a beautiful centralized area for people to see that side of nature. We're putting up new housing, new bird boxes for multiple species, bat houses. And then we're also putting up bird feeders to give the bird watchers a chance to kind of see some of our native birds as they're flitting through the air. So we're excited about everything going forward here at the park.
Yeah, that's exciting. And I'm sure that that'll be some extra tally marks or extra points for the Go Green guidelines. So that's exciting. Exciting news.
Yeah.
All around.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I've been working on a lot of that here recently, and I'm starting to see the glimmer of completion on a lot of it, which is always fun.
Yeah, you know, like starting different projects and stuff like that can be sort of overwhelming until you get that glimpse of, you know, the finished product and how successful it's going to be, and then it just makes it all worth the while. So congrats on all that conservation work, and I hope everything goes well for you guys.
Thank you. We're hoping that it's something that will last well into the future.
It definitely will. Do you guys have any upcoming events or volunteer opportunities? I know we've been doing these podcasts, you know, over the past year, and a lot of sort of volunteer opportunities or events have had to be postponed because of COVID-19. Are you guys have anything coming up anytime soon? Any type of events or volunteer opportunities?
Yeah, so we actually have a volunteer opportunity coming up later this week, October 24th, to help do some work on our brand new outdoor classroom/amphitheater that we've been working on cleaning up for the last year. And then we'll be doing some more volunteer stuff in November as we get our schedules kind of figured out. And then, of course, it's already been posted. It's got limited numbers that people can join me. But the After Thanksgiving hike for Booker T. Washington has been posted. We encourage you to sign up because, like I said, spots are limited.
Awesome. Yeah, I need to it's been quite some time since I've been to your park. So maybe in the next couple months, I'm going down to Chattanooga to do a little bit of work and help one of my buddies move. So maybe I can put some time in my schedule to come check it out. And because, like I said, it's been a good minute since I've been and visited Booker T. Washington. So when I do, I'll definitely make sure to give you a call and see if you're working.
Sounds good. We say I'll look forward to it. It's changed. It's changed a lot, and it will continue to change, and we'll continue to strive into the future.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Jordan, for number one, all you do for the state park, and then also just for taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you guys have a really crazy schedule, all the different hats you have to sort of wear in the park, but thanks for taking time, and I look forward to coming and checking it out.
Oh, thanks for having me. We look forward to having you, and if I'm not available, we'll make sure that someone is to kind of give you the quick tour of the park.
Awesome. Sounds good, man. Have a good one.
You too.